2018 saw many important cases and issues that will shape False Claims Act enforcement today and in the years to come. In this five-part podcast series, we'll analyze some key developments to help you better be prepared if the government comes calling with tough questions. In this episode, we'll visit with Hogan Level's partners, Mike Tice from our Denver office and Chandri Navarro from our Washington, D.C. office, as they discuss defending FCA matters in the midst of the trade war.
Hello, everyone. I'm Mike Tice from our Denver office. I'm a partner in the Investigations White Collar and Fraud Practice Group, and my practice focuses on fraud and false claims litigation and government investigations involving fraud on the United States government.
And I'm Chandri Navarro. I'm a partner in the International Trade Practice Group and focus on customs and trade law policy. I focus on issues before U.S. Customs and Border Protection, the Office of U.S. Trade Representative, the Department of Commerce, U.S. Congress, and Court of International Trade.
And we'd like to welcome you to our podcast, Defending False Claims Cases Involving Tariffs, Duties, and Country of Origin. So, Chandri, let me start by noting that President Trump has made the imposition of import tariffs a centerpiece of this administration's trade policy and has emphasized that our trading partners must treat the United States fairly or risk new tariffs on imported products. At the same time, the administration has said that it will use all tools available to support this effort, and the president has signed two executive orders that emphasize that commitment. Chandri, can you just talk about the way that those executive orders have been implemented and what you think the implications are for enforcement of both trade laws, the Tariff Act, as well as the False Claims Act in cases involving allegations of evasion of duties or violations of other trade laws?
Yes, Mike. Those two orders have provided for increased enforcement by customs on information provided by importers on customs entries. This includes country of origin, which impacts Buy America and TAA compliance. Those executive orders have called for increased funding of U.S. Customs and Border Protection and increased staffing for enforcement actions by customs. So we have seen a significant uptick in enforcement action by CBP, including an increase in requests for information from importers regarding the provisions used to import their merchandise. These proclamations that you've mentioned, coupled with additional funding and staffing, has meant our clients, companies that import all sorts of goods, have received increased questioning by CBP. Obviously, that brings delays and sometimes holding of their merchandise at ports of entry. Importantly, several other actions by President Trump, in particular the imposition of increased import tariffs on steel and aluminum from all over the world, and about an increase in duties on imports from China, which accounts for almost half of trade with China, about $250 billion worth of trade. Those were put into place through two other executive proclamations. And this has caused a significant increase in customs attention.
You know, Chandri, companies that rely on foreign imports have always known about the risk for enforcement by CBP, it seems to me, or ICE. And I think most companies that operate under multiple award schedule contracts with either the General Services Administration or the Department of Veterans Affairs are aware of their Buy America obligations or Trade Agreement Act obligations with respect to, you know, ensuring that they're using the appropriate country of origin, using designated countries to assemble or manufacture their products. I guess I have a question, though, about, you know, what seems to be a real increase in the number of these cases that have been brought as qui tam suits under the False Claims Act. And the Trade Agreements Act seems in particular to have been the subject of a lot of interest among lawyers who routinely represent whistleblowers. So the questions I have for you are, first, do you think that the False Claims Act risks have increased for companies that import products from overseas? And do you think that the politically charged trade landscape has created heightened risk under the False Claims Act for companies that operate using cross-border supply chains?
Absolutely, Mike. I think that what I have seen in the last 25 years of my practice is that there have been very little attention placed by importers on False Claims Act cases. In fact, I'd say for the first 15 or so years of my practice, really had seen none of these cases and no attention placed by the customs bar. And only in the last 5 or 7 years or so have these cases been cropping up involving customs issues, which has been finally brought to the attention of importers. Undoubtedly, the rise in these False Claims Act cases, together with the increased customs enforcement by the Trump administration and the significant increase in import duties that have brought this to be a very important area of, I think, of attention in the customs bar.
So when you talk to your clients, are they surprised to learn that they can be subject to enforcement not only under the Tariff Act or under other customs laws, and not only subject to jurisdiction in the Court of International Trade, but that they can also be sued by some, employee or other private whistleblower in federal district court under the False Claims Act?
Absolutely. These companies are quite surprised to hear that they could have risk for potentially significant penalties under customs statutes regarding incorrect information provided on customs entries, but also be potentially at risk by these False Claims Act cases by either competitors or disgruntled employees. Can you elaborate on how the False Claims Act fits in with enforcement of customs obligations?
Sure. Trade-related cases are brought under what is referred to as the reverse false claims provision of the Act. Reverse false claims because instead of submitting a claim to the United States, demanding a payment from the United States, this is a situation where documents or records are presented to the United States to avoid the obligation to pay money to the United States. So the Act actually says that liability is imposed on a person who knowingly conceals or knowingly or improperly avoids or decreases an obligation to pay or transmit money or property to the government. And it is that term obligation that's the key here. Obligation refers to some pre-existing obligation, some duty or some requirement that money be paid in certain circumstances. And of course, that fits very neatly with the obligation to pay duties upon the importation of certain goods from certain countries. But this was not something that was immediately apparent. As you noted, the reverse false claims provision was not widely applied to duties and tariffs until about 15 years ago in a case called United States versus Universal Fruits and Vegetables was brought and established that, in fact, False Claims Act cases involving tariffs can be litigated in federal district courts. So what this means is that whistleblowers are free to bring these cases alleging that an importer has knowingly avoided paying customs duties by making false statements about tariff classification or valuation or country of origin or eligibility for trade preference. All of these things can be brought as a quitom action in federal district court.
Mike, you mentioned that this obligation to pay duties is what triggers the False Claims Act having the ability to play a role here. As you know, there are a number of goods, in particular medical devices and pharmaceutical products, drugs, that are duty-free and would never, in effect, have an obligation to pay duties. So my question is, how is it that there have been a number of different False Claims Act cases brought on country of origin errors when there is no obligation to pay duty since these goods are duty-free?
That's a great question, Chandri. So the way that this works is slightly different for the sale of medical devices or pharmaceutical products to the United States, to the General Services Administration or the Department of Veterans Affairs. And the obligation provision, the reverse false claims provision that deals with the obligation to pay duties is not what is triggered. Instead, the theory in Trade Agreement Act cases is really a much more conventional false claims theory, which is to say that you have a contract with the Department of Veterans Affairs, let's say, just as an example. Under that contract, you're obliged to source your products, your medical device or your pharmaceutical in designated countries, countries with which we have trade agreements. You don't source your product there. You use a non-designated country. And then when the product is sold to the United States, it contains an implied false certification that it is properly sourced. And so it's basically a false claim to the United States that you have complied with the Trade Agreement Act when in fact you have not. So the theory of damages is also different in those cases. And again, as you point out, it's not avoiding the payment of duties in that case, the payment of the tariff. It is failing to comply with the country of origin requirement. And quitam relators and in some cases the government take the position that the measure of damages, the loss to the United States as the contracting party there, is that it is not receiving the value that it is entitled to by having a company comply with the Trade Agreement Act. And so in some cases, the plaintiffs take the position that the full value of the product or the full value of the contract is the amount of the loss.
Wow, that's pretty significant. And I can see now why there have been so many of these cases being brought up on country of origin in light of the fact that the values of those sales to the government are so significant. Mike, it seems to me that private citizens as a relator seems like the real wild card in customs and trade enforcement, in particular, competitors and disgruntled employees. How do you think that changes in this risk profile for companies has changed in this space?
It is clear that over the past 20 years or more, really, the enforcement of the False Claims Act by the United States Department of Justice has been driven by private citizens who file quitam suits. Overwhelmingly, the recoveries in False Claims Act cases come in cases that are filed initially by private citizens. And they are a wild card because the plaintiff's bar that represents quitam relators is not constrained the same way that trial attorneys at the United States Department of Justice or assistant United States attorneys are. They quite often are much more ambitious or aggressive in pushing new theories. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, a number of new areas of False Claims Act enforcement have really come out of, very aggressive theories being pushed initially by quitam relators and then later adopted by the United States government. But for sure, one of the things that we have seen is that many of the recent cases have been initiated by quitam relators who either bring up the customs or duties violations or these country of origin issues. And as you know, we've recently handled investigations involving violations of the Trade Agreement Act with medical devices and pharmaceutical products, where this whole question of substantial transformation is the key. The question is, where is the product substantially transformed?
I think it's really interesting because, as you know, under customs laws, importers have to exercise reasonable care, due diligence in the information that they use to enter their goods, be it tariff classification, country of origin, customs value, trade preferences, anti-dumping duties, etc. This means that importers are supposed to be constantly looking at their entries, doing post-importation corrections. And in fact, the prior disclosure statute and regulations provides a way where companies are really incentivized to look into their imports, find errors, and correct them. And when customs does an audit, they really expect companies to have been doing this, to really be monitoring these issues and errors. And so I think it's really interesting that while companies are incentivized on the customs side to find errors, work with employees within the company to find the errors and correct them, that now they're seeing that there's a potential risk that one of those employees, if he leaves the company, he or she leaves the company and is disgruntled, could then file a case against the company knowing about those errors.
Yeah, so it's important to understand that there are provisions in the False Claims Act that are supposed to serve to protect a company from being penalized under multiple civil monetary penalty regimes. The False Claims Act contains what is sometimes referred to as a government action bar that prohibits False Claims Act quitam suits that are based upon allegations or transactions which are the subject of a civil suit or an administrative civil monetary penalty proceeding in which the government is already a party. So the idea of that is that if the government has already commenced a civil suit or an administrative monetary penalty proceeding based on alleged customs violations, a relator should not be able to bring a qui tam suit. There is a separate provision, the public disclosure bar, that provides for dismissal of a qui tam complaint if the allegations or transactions are substantially similar to those publicly disclosed in a federal criminal, civil, or administrative hearing in which the government is a party. And I should also point out that there is case law that recognizes that when the government collects treble damages under the False Claims Act, that the defendant has to be given credit for any repayments that have been made under common law remedies or under other statutory regimes.
Mike, you know, we defended recently a large pharmaceutical client in a case where a private citizen sued the company under the False Claims Act to allege the company had provided incorrect country of origin claims on several drugs that it sold the Veterans Administration under public contracts. So basically, this private citizen was trolling the public-facing Veterans Affairs contracts to find what he felt might be incorrect country of origin claims on drugs, that they were in fact from the United States or from other countries that are TAA eligible, and filed a suit against this company. The case was taken up by the Department of Justice, who started the investigation. And fortunately for this client, they had contacted us to conduct an internal compliance review on customs issues, and we had found potential problems in some country of origin determinations. And so we had done a really intensive review, had filed a prior disclosure with the CBP in order to protect the company from any potential penalties for having incorrectly designated the country of origin on its import entries. And because this company had done this extensive analysis, had filed a prior disclosure and corrected any errors, the Department of Justice decided not to pursue the claim. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, there is certainly some risk for companies in making a prior disclosure that you'll have the situation that you describe, where an employee or somebody inside the company who is aware of the potential violations of customs laws decides to bring a qui tam suit. But there is a case that was decided in May of 2018 that may provide some solace to a company in this situation. This case was called Chagrin versus LDR Industries. And in the case, a federal court held that a penalty issued by CBP in an administrative proceeding bars an action brought under the qui tam provisions of the False Claims Act. The court dismissed the qui tam complaint, finding that, in fact, there was an administrative civil money penalty proceeding and that the imposition of that fine and the approval of the settlement of that claim should bar the False Claims Act suit. So there is an argument that commencement of a prior disclosure under the statute should constitute the commencement of an administrative civil money penalty proceeding for purposes of the government action bar. And certainly if CBP imposes penalties in the prior disclosure proceeding, there's a strong argument that a whistleblower should not be permitted to file a False Claims Act suit involving the same conduct.
Well, I'm glad to hear that there might be some protections for importers because, as you know, for many years, in fact, for decades, I've been counseling my clients in filing prior disclosures because it's such an extraordinarily beneficial tool for importers to use to be able to protect themselves from what can be significant customs penalties. For example, for duty-free medical devices and pharmaceutical products, customs penalties can be 40% of the value of a company's imports during the last 5 years that have been entered with an incorrect country of origin, even though there was no duty impact to that error. So if a company imported $100 million worth of devices or drugs in the last 5 years, and had not accurately claimed the country of origin on its entries, it could have a potential penalty risk of $40 million, even though by claiming that it was a country of origin, France, instead of the UK, meant absolutely nothing in terms of the duty impact to the United States Treasury. So submitting a prior disclosure to CBP can completely inoculate the company from those significant potential penalties. And it's very attractive.
Let me understand that. So is it the case then, Chandri, that there's no penalty that is imposed if you qualify under the prior disclosure law?
Correct. If the importer files a valid prior disclosure, which means it meets all of the prongs of the prior disclosure statute and regulations, and there were no duties at issues, and that's the case for these medical devices and drugs where there's no duties, and you claim, for example, incorrect country of origin, there'd be no duty impact. There is absolutely zero penalty by statute on the importer once they file that prior disclosure and it's accepted by customs. So it's a very beneficial provision that's, you know, statutory. And so only in the case, for example, where if an incorrect tariff classification was provided and there was a difference in the duties, or in the cases that you've mentioned where an anti-dumping duty wasn't paid, et cetera, the company, if it finds this error themselves prior to customs initiating an investigation on this particular matter, they can file a prior disclosure, pay the duties due, and the only penalty provided by the statute that customs can apply is the interest on the duties that they should have been paying. So it's, again, a very, very attractive and huge incentive to do this. And what we've been doing is talking to companies that while they're doing a prior disclosure and investigating the disclosure, that perhaps they need to be very cautious with who in the company is aware of the error and of this disclosure process so that they can somewhat mitigate the risks of an employee being one of these potential qui tam filers. Do you think that's a correct way to approach this?
I think that that's the right approach. You know, it's apparent to me that there is some risk in the prior disclosure process before the imposition of a penalty. It's just not entirely clear whether a qui tam complaint can be filed in that period of time and proceed. As I said, there are arguments to be made that the relator should not be able to proceed either under the government action bar or the public disclosure bar, and there are perhaps other jurisdictional provisions in the act. But there is a window of opportunity for relators, and as we have seen, some private citizens have taken advantage of that opportunity.
I think it's fascinating that there are these attorneys and private citizens that are forming their own companies to sort of troll even eBay, for example, for potential False Claims Act cases, and certainly walking into Walmart or a Costco or other retailer and looking at country of origin claims on over-the-counter drugs, painkillers, et cetera, and thinking about filing these cases. So more and more people are looking at False Claims Act to put pressure on companies, to put pressure on competitors, or to seek gain for themselves financially. This is sort of seems like a big boondoggle. So Mike, do you see this trend continuing?
I do. I think that the trend is unmistakable. Over the past few years, I'm seeing more and more cases filed under the False Claims Act that are based upon evasion of duties or violations of country of origin requirements under Buy America Act or the Trade Agreement Act, and I don't expect to see that trend go away. So if you do want more information about the Chagrin case, we have a publication on Customs and Trade Agreement Act cases that you can look to for more details of that case. That's all the time that we have for today. We thank you for joining us. I'm Mike Tice.
And I'm Chandri Navarro.
And we both welcome the opportunity to talk not only more about the False Claims Act and tariffs and duty implications, but also to assist you or your company if these issues arise. You can find our contact information at HoganLovells.com. Where you can also listen to additional episodes of our podcast series that focus on other key developments around the False Claims Act. Thanks again.
Thanks for joining us today. For additional analysis on this topic and others around the FCA, please download our latest publication, False Claims Act 2018 and the Road Ahead, from HoganLovells.com.